Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. I want to thank today's sponsor, FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners like you get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. The end of the year is fast approaching, and you need to get on top of your business. You can automatically import your business expenses from your bank, snap a picture of your business receipt to log expenses with your phone, and assign expenses to clients for easy reimbursement. To check out everything that FreshBooks has to offer and get a 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much again for joining me today. If you are enjoying the show, please do not forget to go to iTunes and leave a rating and review. It helps so very, very, very much. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe, and you will never miss another episode. All right, let's do this. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a web developer, marketer, and an entrepreneur. My guest is the co-founder and co-developer of Digital Access Pass. He is also the host of the podcast SubscribeMe.fm, a show about making and marketing digital content using membership sites, online courses, and recurring subscriptions. He's the best-selling author of No Business Like E-Business, and according to Google, he's the coolest geek on the planet. Now, let's hack. Ravi Jayagopal. I want to thank ProJob Network for sponsoring Hack the Entrepreneur today. If you're a small business owner, there's thousands of things you can do to find a great new hire, or you can do just one. Post with ProJob Network. Just one click, post your ad to over 40 different job sites. It would probably take you forever to do that. And even after you did that, you wouldn't get the preferred placement that you'll get from the ProJob Network. In about a day, you'll have a list of qualified local candidates to choose from. Because ProJob Network will place your job in front of qualified candidates who've asked to hear about specific job opportunities like yours. How great is that? You'll save time and you'll save money. Plus, you'll find the best people. Try ProJob Network free for 1 week by visiting tryprojob.com/hack. That's tryprojob.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have another very, very, very special guest. Ravi, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be fun. Ravi, could you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
It's actually a combination of a couple of things. So I'm a hardcore programming geek. Some people would say nerd, but I prefer the word geek. So it is a lot more classier and cool.
It is.
So I'm super technical, and at a very early stage of the internet, like 97, 98, I started doing stuff online, creating websites and started selling my own stuff. And so basically, because I implemented a lot of things, I also started learning about marketing. And then, thankfully to my genes that I received from my father and mother, I'm also a very creative guy, and I read a lot. So it's a combination of being a very technical guy, somebody who's really good at marketing, and somebody who's also creative. That all the combination gives me a very unique perspective on product creation, product development, marketing, and hacking products in the sense. So you can, hacking the hacker would be.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that because you're right in the fact that most like hardcore programming geeks like yourself are just that. And they actually. So you must have these hilarious, like, if we could see inside your head, there must be, like, crazy fights that go on. Because I guess, like, Is it like in Dilbert and stuff? Like, and I'm like the marketing side of a business, right? And I've worked with the hardcore geeks, and because they're, you guys are amazing. But usually there's almost disdain between the two sides.
Exactly. So that's the part. It's almost like people who are very puristic in their skills hate marketing, right? They think sales is sleazy, marketers are bad. So they have all these mindset issues, and programmers generally look down upon salespeople. Salespeople or people in marketing look down upon programmers, you know. So when you can combine the best of both worlds, you have a very unique perspective, and that's what's helped me be successful.
Do you think that helps you build products better?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you see, when you're purely a programmer, you're only thinking about features, right? How to make this specific thing work. You're not going into, and that helps the customer because, right? One of the basic ideas of copywriting is start with the feature, and then explain the benefit. So my software does A, and that helps the customer because, and that's when you actually develop the benefit. So usually programmers are a lot short-sighted because they're only looking at how to make a specific feature work and not really looking at it from a, even though people might have experience in, you know, user interface, user experience, UX, UI and stuff, they're still only looking at it from a purely technical way and not from a, they're not putting on a marketer's hat. And marketing, what they do, people in this is, I mean, in typical corporate world, right? What they do is, oh, I want this to be done like this, but they're not thinking what are the implications on support and technology? Is it even possible? What needs to be done in order to prepare for this? How many people will we need? So when you know both sides of the equation, it becomes very easy. And that's actually been my blessing and my curse, that I can do both. Right. So when I was a child, I used to be good at a lot of different things. Right. I used to be able to sing. I played the guitar. I was really good at a few sports, cricket, as you may know, it's very popular in India. But so a lot of people who knew me well and were, you know, good friends with my parents, they used to call me Jack of all trades. But then one day, a relative who was, you know, not very, very good friends with my parents in passing, very said, yeah, jack of all trades, master of none. So I was so destroyed by that statement at the time. And my father pulled me aside and said, you know what, don't worry about it. You know, it's amazing to be a jack of all trades, even if you're a master of none, because there can only be one Michael Jordan, one LeBron James, and so on. What if you don't make it to the NBA or the NFL, right? Or the hockey? You can't just go into a shell and live in your mother's basement for the rest of your life. You still need to do something. So all of those crossover skills from my childhood have really helped me. Yeah, so I'm not the greatest programmer. I'm not the biggest name marketer. You probably never heard of me before, you know, the show. And so I'm not the biggest in any of the little things, but I do a lot of things good together.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. That's such a great mindset to have and great way to come at business and come at life, right? That's got you where you are.
Absolutely. So it gave me a lot of different perspectives.
Okay, so we heard sort of back when you were a kid, and then we heard around 97, 98, you went online and started like dabbling in websites and businesses. What sort of, is there a story that happened in between those? Because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life, right? When they realize one of two things, that either they have this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or they find they simply just can't work for somebody else anymore. So somehow, I think between the time you were born and raised in India to 97, 98, when you started, did something happen in there that made you realize this about yourself?
Oh, yeah. So it had a lot to do with my childhood and the way my father, he's no more. He was an Indian film legend, South Indian film legend. He and his brothers and his father, they're all huge names in the Indian film industry. So he was a writer and director, and he always worked from home. And he was always there, right? When I came back from school, when I came back from college and during the holidays, he was always there. So it's almost like I almost expected him to always be there. And that I had a different kind of security growing up. And then because I always saw him own his own time, he never had to go to a job. I never saw him get stressed out about Mondays. He was, you know, it was every day was a weekend for him. So he's, you know, he was ready to, if I wanted to go for a movie on a weekday, he would be there. So 3 o'clock, we could go for a movie, matinee show. So it was like that. So that kind of freedom, and he was really, really good at what he did. Of course, that part I had to develop myself, but just watching him have that kind of control and then watching all the parents of my friends who had to go to a job and they had limited time and they used to come back late in the evenings and they didn't have time to go do this or do that with their kids. So weekends they would work. And so watching all that from a very young age, I always wanted to be, you know, have my own thing going on. I did not want to work. So that was like a huge thing. But then when so I started a couple of businesses in India and I pretty much ran them into the ground, right? Because they did really well, actually, right? But they were brick and mortar businesses. And I just could not figure out how to scale that. And it ended up sucking up a lot of my own time. I wanted to start something, let it run, and then so I could do what I really wanted to do, which I didn't know at the time what it was, but I wanted to do something else. And I was trying to figure out my niche and it did not work. So that's when I had started a internet browsing center, which was a big deal in 95, 96, when people did not have computers and internet connections at home. So you used to go to this cafe. It was almost like a Kinko's kind of setup. I'm not sure if you're familiar in the US, like photocopies and internet and desktop publishing. So I started that center and I had a lot of time on my hands. So I started dabbling around with websites. And a friend came in and said he wanted to impress his girlfriend. So he said, is there anything you can do, you know, put it on a website? So I started messing around with HTML. Java was a big thing back then. It would crash browsers all the time. So, and Netscape Navigator was a browser that I had purchased for $30 or $40. It was amazing. It was an internet browser that you had to buy. So started dabbling in stuff, created a website for him with this cool Java, you know, animation thing that he brought in a few pictures of his girlfriend. It would rotate and revolve and explode and all kind of stuff. So that's when the internet bug hit me and I said, wow, this is amazing. I can do this all day. And like a couple of years later, my wife was pregnant with our first daughter and that I was looking for Indian baby names online and there was no website. So that's when I said, I'm going to create my own website. And that's how that was my first website.
Nice. I love it. And so now you get to be at home for your kids when they come home from school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Last 6 years.
That's awesome.
Every day. Sometimes my daughter hates that, that I'm always there. She finds that her friends have a better time with privacy and stuff and at home. The parents are at work and they get the whole house to themselves. But when my kids come home, my wife and I are both here.
Yeah, that's so different, right? That's so different than your take on it. Looking back on your childhood, you loved that your father was there.
Exactly.
And it's funny. I was actually literally just having this thought like 2 days ago. I think I was coming home from just like a walk with my dog in the middle of the day. And I was thinking that about my daughter because she's also homeschooled. And my wife is also home too. So we're literally all here all the time. And she goes out to things, my daughter and stuff, and like to classes and different things and comes back. But it's like, we're always here. And I was like, I wonder if she likes that. I think that it's cool, but she might just be like, God, go out once in a while, man.
Exactly. It's so bad that I actually got diagnosed with very, very severely low vitamin D.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get out, don't get much sun in spite of being in San Diego.
And you're in San Diego, like the sunniest place in the country, I believe.
So beautiful sun. Yeah, it's very nice weather outside, but I hardly go out because, you know, I'm fulfilled here.
Exactly.
Sitting in my home office.
All right, so you have this combination of programmer and marketer, lethal combination. That's your one thing that you told us about. So now every expert talks about 80-20 rule, right? Do 20%, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at, delegate the rest. Ravi, could you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Yeah, multiple things, actually. One is managing people. I hate, you know, having to, I can work with people in a partnership kind of thing. Even that, I'm not so good. But the biggest one is I cannot manage people, delegate work, outsource stuff, figure out where to stop what I'm doing, and you know, all the little things I can do when I'm something not clearly not good at, like designing images or some kind of website design, I can outsource. But when it comes to some core stuff for my business, I find it very hard to outsource and delegate and trust people that they can do it at the same level I can. That's been the hardest part.
How come do you think this is? Or is it even something that you, not even how come, that's probably innate within you, but obviously you know that you could, if you wanted, you could teach yourself how to do that and let go. Do you just feel that it's something that you don't need to do or don't want to do or don't want your business doing?
You mean the stuff that I don't want to do or the stuff that
in general, the idea of delegation and getting stuff, like how you say you don't really like to delegate, you don't like to give things past Correct. Your desk. And obviously that limits you and your business reach and growth, right?
Absolutely.
Is that something you choose or like, is it...
No, it's just come from not finding the right people to work with or have work for you, right? Finding the right combination of skills and location and attitude. So basically, it's a hiring the right people problem. And when you don't find the right people, every time they screw up, your trust in outsourcing that goes down. Obviously, you know, the lesser things I care about, I can easily outsource. But when it comes to, like in the initial phases, I would not outsource the programming of the code. I would be fine with outsourcing support, but not the actual coding, because now you have to protect the code base and not make sure you don't get ripped off and somebody's not sharing it on, you know, where sites and hacker sites here and there. So it comes down to the mission critical things. I just can't seem to, you know, and right now I've gotten better, you know, after being doing this for like, you know, 12, 13 years, 15 years, I've gotten better at it. And having my wife in the business also helps, because she's taken over a lot of the stuff that I would normally think about outsourcing. So, and it's helped us that we have moved to we try not to step over each other's areas.
Nice. So now you're like a two-person team where she does her part, you do your part.
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of overlap. We both are, you know, have the same kind of skills. She used to be in the corporate world, but she joined DAP, which is Digital Access Pass, 2 years into launching it. From then, we've both been doing this full time. So she's kind of got the same kind of skills. She's much better at me at a lot of things, and I'm better in a lot of different things. So we have slowly tried to separate out and try not to step on each other's toes. It's hard, you know, especially because you have similar personalities, similar goals, and similar skills.
Yeah. Yeah, I could imagine it's hard. Okay, so let's talk about your work day now. So you work from home, you live in one of the sunniest places in the country, and yet you suffer from lack of vitamin D because you don't go outside because you're working so much. So I want to know, today is a work day, much like probably most days are. You can clarify that if you wish. But I would like to know what, say, the first 30 minutes or 60 minutes, whatever your sort of morning routine is, and when the workday, at what time the workday starts for you.
So I'm generally a night bird. I love working in the nights because it's calm and quiet and no distractions. So I was like that from college. Always, and everybody else was sleeping, I was the only guy up trying to study for the exam. So it's kind of carried over. And ever since I started, you know, I went into business full time, I've now work only mostly in the night. So I used to work till like 6 a.m. in the morning and wake up like 1 p.m. Now I slowly tried to cut it down and go to bed like 4:30 and try to get about seven and a half hours of sleep. So usually around noon, I'm waking up. Then I have my breakfast and coffee, and then usually I'm reading up on the tech blogs in the morning. Seth Godin is one of my favorite websites I start with. And I go to, you know, Reddit, if you've not heard it, R-E-D-D-I-T. That's a tech, it's like a tech aggregator of comments, and it's like almost like a dig.
And GIFs, an amazing GIFs.
Oh, fantastic.
Or GIFs, it's I guess funny. You call them. It depends on how you pronounce it.
Yeah, GIFs.
Yeah. I don't That's all I use Reddit for, sorry.
Yeah. So Reddit is, I have the technology section bookmark, right? So I go right to the technology thing where I get a full snapshot of everything, from Microsoft to Google to all the Adobe to all the companies, everything, including the NSA. So I get a full update of every single thing that's happening. That's my favorite thing to do, first thing.
Nice. So was there ever a time, so in college it makes sense, like sleeping until noon and then working all night. That's a really typical college thing, right? It's how we all sort of live. But then
Correct. Most
people, it gets sort of like taken out of us, right? Like that's like that's not the norm. That's not how you exist. If you want to start a business, then you have to wake up in the morning. You have to, you know what I mean? Do the routine that everybody else does. Did you ever struggle with this in that, like from college till now?
Yes. Taking out the entrepreneur in me was really hard. So my entire life, you could say, was built up towards not working, not going to a job. No, I shouldn't say not working, not going to a job. So everything was like, okay, I got to pay my dues. Because when I came to the US in 2000, I had to come here on a visa, right? Work visa. And I had to stay with a certain company for so many years and they had to apply for my green card. And then 9/11 happened and it was so tough keeping a single job, but I managed to, you know, stick through it. But when you change jobs, I had never had a problem finding jobs. My problem was that I had to stay with the same company for 5 years and, you know, before I got my green card. That was the hardest part, because if you change jobs, then your green card process started all over again from scratch.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was really hard. So a couple of times I ended up switching jobs and I lost my green card status. So I had to reapply, and it eventually took about 9 years to get my green card. And the whole 9 years was just basically holding my breath and waiting for the day when I will be able to do stuff on my own. So that kind of put a damper on my entrepreneurial efforts, because if I had, like, I think I might have mentioned this in my email to you. In 2000, I had the Ryan Dye story. Tell me anytime you want me to get on that, and I'll tell you. It's a really interesting story. But, you know, so from 2000 onwards, if I had not been able to, you know, if I had not been forced to go to a job and hold a job for many years, I would have been in a different place right now at a much higher level of growth.
Really?
Absolutely. Because now in 9 years, I had to spend moonlighting, right? Essentially, I had to go to a job. I had to be really good at it too. I couldn't do the job by, you know, just, it's not like I was doing a basic desk job where you're just punching paperwork. So I was always at the top of the food chain in the sense that, you know, whether it was when I was doing programming, I wanted to be the best programmer, not the fastest, but the best in terms of, you know, the whole knowing about what features and not just coding. Similarly, when I become project manager, kind of thing, so architect and so on. So I had to put in the time to do good and be really good at my job. But when I wanted to start my own stuff, I had to do it nights and weekends. So on the train, you know, going to work to New York City, I wrote a book on the train. It took me 3-5 years to write it little by little, but I wrote my first book on the train in 2007. And then everything was done nights and weekends. Then I had to come home and spend time with the kids. And after they went to bed around 9:30, that's when, you know, I basically said goodnight to my wife and I went to the basement. So that's when it was almost like I tore out my shirt and the Superman logo started showing. Right. So I had to wait till 10 p.m. to rip off my shirt so I can get into Superman mode. And that's when I used to work till, you know, 3-4 hours. It's almost like 2 o'clock. Then I had to get up in the morning at 5 to catch the train. So it was sleeping 3-5 hours a day and for many years and working nights and weekends and trying to squeeze out every little bit of time. It was hard.
The next time somebody emails me or tweets me or does something and tells me all these hopes and dreams and things that they want to do with their life, but they don't have enough time, I'm sending them straight to you. Because that's amazing. That's you, like you had the determination to not only get your green card and it took 9 years and put up with the jobs you didn't want because you didn't even want a job. Then you also raised a family, were a husband, and then also moonlit on the side, started your own businesses. That's freaking amazing.
Thank you.
I love it, man. That's awesome. So, like, the excuse of not having enough time just doesn't, it's not that absolutely. You don't have time, it's you don't want it bad enough.
Yeah, so
you need to want it as bad as a rabbit.
Yeah, it's the same thing, like, when people used to, you know, I've always been overweight, and when people used to say, you know, what relatives and stuff said, why don't you go work out and stuff, I used to say, I just don't have the time. So I had time for everything. I used to sleep for 4 hours, and I could make time for every other thing, but not for working out. So it's just a matter of, what do you want to do? You'll exactly. always make time for something that's really important to you.
Exactly. Well said. Well said. Okay, we're going to move to projects. Projects is a very loose term on this show. Anything you decided that you want to sort of go in that direction, put your time, energy, and resources into it. We could talk the new podcast that you just started if you wish, but you're a busy person. You have lots to do. You're running multiple things now, plus you are still a father. And a husband. So at some point you have ideas that come through your inbox, come across your desk, come through your head, things that you could do, yet you can't do them all. What's the process that you go through, Ravi, personally, to determine that something like your new podcast is something that you should put your time and energy into?
Right. So filtering out ideas is the hardest part for me, right? I'm getting ideas so much because, like I said, one of the strengths is that, you know, I have all these different skills, the technical, the marketing, the creativity. And then on top of that, I'm doing a lot of stuff. I'm trying out. I'm implementing stuff in my business. I'm learning. I'm crazy. I'm a super information junkie, right? I don't think anybody consumes information at the rate I do. Not just while sitting at my desk, I'm consuming information while walking the dog and listening to podcasts and listening to audio versions of YouTube. So I'm getting ideas all the time. And you have to put this really multiple filters on it and say, what do you, you know, is it relevant to what I'm doing, what my products, right? The hardest part is starting in a new business. And I don't recommend doing that for most people, where people say, oh, you know, just figure out what people want and then create it. It's not just that. There's one more level to that. It's what people want in the area that you can succeed at, that you can create, right? So I wouldn't go out and create a business on gardening, right? I could, I guess, team up with somebody who's really good at that, but that's not what I'm trying to do. So it has to be an intersection of what people want, what you can monetize, and what you're really good at that you can get into. So I'm constantly having to filter out, okay, so that idea is not good enough, so I'll just put it aside. I have a way to, you know, there's bookmark tools like Delicious and Wunderlist. So Wunderlist is one of my favorite tools. So I create all these sublists and any ideas go in there. I make a note of it. I never lose track of that because I could come back someday and actually that idea will actually result in a spin or spin-off for my existing product. I may not implement it the exact same way, but I'll just take the general idea and I might be able to do something with it in my existing products. So constant filtering and saying, what am I good at? How can I use this in my existing business? Because I don't want to go and create an entirely new business, build a completely new audience, build a completely new website, go into a niche that I'm not comfortable with, having to partner up with somebody else just to provide the content because I'm no good at it. I don't want to do all that. It is, how can I leverage my existing audience? So if I'm selling membership software, so a plugin that is good enough, that's useful for them, instead of going into an entirely new software area and say, I'm going to start a new SaaS business.
Yeah, that's smart. That's smart. And I mean, now, because you have a main core business, now everything you want to do should be based around that and that can kind of feed off of each other, right?
Absolutely. So right from the beginning, I was...
Hence the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So my podcast also, the way I wanted to, it came out, partly because I was, you know, I was a huge fan of talk show radio right from the beginning. Back when I was a child in India, there was this radio shows. You had to tune in at a certain time. And I loved those shows more than actually just listening to music. I was always fascinated by the commentary and the arguments and the discussion between two people perceived to be experts. And then we used to get very few TV channels when I was a child. So CNN was one of them. And I used to watch Larry King. And I loved the concept of having a guest and, you know, having this intelligent banter. So many times it was funny, informative. So this idea of a talk show and having my own show was so, So I was always so desperate to do it, but I never had the time nor the platform for many years. And then once I got into podcasting, every time I listened to a podcast and I heard somebody say something not so great, especially with the information and technology podcast, I said, I could do that so much better, and I have so much more information. I just have to get over my stupid issue with my accent. So
that's... We all have to get over our own issues. I was the guy that could never, and I mean until like a year ago, I could never, growing up, like recording into like a tape deck and stuff, and I could, somebody play my voice back, I would just cringe and like run away. I hated it. It's like, seriously, now this is what I do all day. It's crazy.
Right. There's an article that said why we hate our own voice.
Yeah, right. There's actually like a science behind it now. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it was always there. We just didn't know it yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Once you start podcasting and then you start Googling, why do I hate my voice so
much? Exactly, because we all do. We just have to get over these things if we're going to, I mean, not just for podcasting, it's for everything, right? We have to get over our worst enemies in the fact that we self-doubt.
Right, and taking yourself too seriously. And it was easy for me with all the other stuff because, you know, when blogging, I didn't have a problem because I generally had good English skills and I could edit stuff. But when it came to speaking, now I have to deal with all these different accents in my head and then filter out the right one and so that the right sounding words come out.
Yeah, well, accents are strange things, so I wouldn't worry about yours because, I mean, you probably don't even think you have one. It's just the way it is. I don't really think you have one, and I don't think I have one, but then people tell me I have one. And I was like, apparently I sound like totally 100% Canadian, and I was like, I didn't know that was an accent, but apparently everybody doesn't think they have an accent, so it's great. All right, Ravi, this has been fun, but we do need to wrap up. So we're going to wrap up on this final question that I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we are always projecting our successes into the future, right? So 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years down the road, when you put out that new book, when you launch that new software, when your podcast hits number one, all those things are where we're striving for and where we're heading to. But before we even get there, we set bigger, loftier goals into the future because this is what we always do to ourselves. And sometimes it feels like we're never successful. We're never where we want to be. And I've talked to people who have insane businesses and people who are just starting out. We all feel the same. We're all not where we want to be. So I would love to take you out of this gap that we can live in. And if you could stop right now, turn around, look behind you, look at where you've come from a child till now, everything you've learned, everything you've done, everything you've accomplished up till this very moment, and tell me how you feel about it.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to sound cocky, but you know, I'm pretty happy with what I've accomplished so far. I mean, there's a lot, like you said, there's always more stuff we want. We want to become the next John Nassar, the next Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, the Pat Flynn, or whatever industry you are, you want to become the big name in that industry. But where does it stop, right? And when I was younger, I had all these aspirations of, you know, being really famous, huge name, blah, 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 being a celebrity. But as I've grown older, the concept of legacy is becoming more and more murkier because I saw what my father did, right? And once you're gone, you're gone. What does it really matter? How much does legacy really matter other than your people who are close to you and your son thinking about you in a very fond way every time he thinks about you, your wife and your kids and your relatives celebrating you? That's what really matters. And how many lives did you change? So it's not about how many people know you. It doesn't matter if I know Brad Pitt, you know, or Angelina Jolie. It's about how many lives they changed in terms of the great stuff they've done, like or if they left behind a legacy in technology. So that's where I'm trying to get. So I don't really need to be popular anymore. I just want to change and touch a lot of lives. And so my wife and I, we have this foundation in India. We donate a lot of money every year to really poor kids from really bad situations, and we bring them out of it. And then we're doing, so it's always a battle between how big you want to go. Do you want to do a 100-person company, or you want to have this most amazing, fulfilled life where you can pretty much afford anything you want, but you still don't need a 50 or 100-person company and make $50 million.
Beautifully said. I love it. All right, Ravi, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you stopping by so much. We've talked about your businesses and your new podcast sort of in passing. Could you specifically tell the listener where to go find out more about both those?
Sure. So I'm the co-founder and co-developer of digitalaccesspass.com, formerly known as DAP. It's a membership plugin for WordPress. You can contact me from there. Or you can also go to my site for my podcast, which is subscribeme.fm, which is a podcast about membership sites and online courses and recurring subscriptions and digital products.
It's a great way to get started online is a membership site.
Absolutely.
So go check out subscribeme.fm and Digital Access Pass. If once you learn how to set up a membership site, that's the place to go do it. And I'll also link to Reddit as well in the show notes. If you haven't seen it, there's the link that will take you right there. So once again, Ravi, thank you so much. I really, really do appreciate you stopping by. And please keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you so much, John. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to be on your show. And now I think I've finally arrived now that I'm on your show.
I wanted to end just silently on that, but sorry. Thank you.
Oh, defender of humanity. Thank you for having me.
Well, that was a fun conversation. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And I hope you got as much out of it as I did because, wow, like Ravi's been through so much. He's what he had to deal with getting a green card for so many years and having to work a job yet completely still on the side, putting in the time, the effort to build a business because that's what he wanted to do. And he knew that in the long term that that's what he wanted. And so rather than watching TV, rather than hanging out with friends all the time, he took that time and he developed businesses out of it. And that now buys him the freedom to, as he said, sleep till noon and work exactly how he wants, when he wants, and where he wants. And that's awesome. I love that. So we go back to the conversation and we listen to what Ravi said. And he said a lot of smart things. He did. But there was one thing that he said that really, really stood out to me. It was just right there in front of me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
So I'm getting ideas all the time. And you have to put this really multiple filters on it and say, what do you, you know, is it relevant to what I'm doing, what my products, right? The hardest part is starting in a new business. And I don't recommend doing that for most people, where people say, oh, you know, just figure out what people want and then create it. It's not just that. There's one more level to that. It's what people want in the area that you can succeed at, that you can create, right? So I wouldn't go out and create a business on gardening, right? I could, I guess, team up with somebody who's really good at that, but that's not what I'm trying to do. So it has to be an intersection of what people want, what you can monetize, and what you're really good at that you can get into.
And that's the hack. Ravi, Ravi, Ravi. Yes, yes. I love this. This is good. So the multiple filters, this is something that we all struggle with, right? Is the ideas we come up with. Well, the first is the struggle of like working on that sort of idea muscle and coming up with business ideas or product ideas or new service ideas constantly. Because the more ideas we come up with. It's an exercise that, and it's a muscle that you have to use. The more you use it, the more it happens. But then once you have all these ideas, how do you decide which ones to go? And so I love that. It's not just what people want, but also what you can monetize, and then what you can create. So Ravi then says that he doesn't want to go like create a gardening product because he's not an expert in it. He does sort of sideline and say, well, I could partner with somebody, which I would say that's an excellent idea. But typically the ideas we come up with aren't the ideas that we're not good at. Typically, 90% or more of the ideas that you come up with are things that are troubling you or bothering you. Like if you're not into gardening at all, you're typically not going to come up with some great idea for the gardening market. It's just not how it works. That's not to say that somebody from the gardening market couldn't see you being successful in any market that you're in, and then also come to you and be like, wow, we should partner together on this because you obviously know how to sell products. That can happen. So I think that's almost a moot sort of point. The idea is that you have to have these filters. You have to know sort of what it is you are trying to accomplish in your business. And then I love the idea of complementary sort of businesses. So you create that first one in the product that you want, in the market that you want to be part of. And then you only create products or services or new businesses or new anything around that that can complement each other. It doesn't mean that they have to be the same, but they're not completely different sort of markets. They don't pull you in different directions. They all sort of can be dealt with or put into the same marketplace, and different people might buy them, but at least you are, everything you're doing is working sort of in the same general sort of, I guess, theme. Thematically, they should make sense together. And so I love that about this idea, Ravi, and doing that so that it's not, you're not now talking about gardening, then you're talking about dogs, then you're talking about business, then you're talking about, it's just, it doesn't make sense. And I think that it pulls you in too many directions that you will never really fully get to push anything as far as it needs to go to the point where it actually succeeds. Ravi, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. That's a lot of fun. As always, thank you so very, very, very much for taking the time to stop by today and yeah, spend it with Ravi and I think it was a lot of good value came out of this conversation. I hope that you enjoy. I hope that you, yeah, if you have any further questions, by all means, john@hacktheentrepreneur is my email. You can email me, follow up, any questions, comments, anything you'd like at all, really. Just drop them into my inbox and yeah, come straight to my phone and I will respond as soon as I can. All right. It's been fun. And as always, please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.